Hi there, my name is Fran the Quarter and I'm the creator of this podcast. I'm also an experienced HEMA instructor of more than a decade. If you'd like to learn rapier and companion weapons or side sword from me, do get in touch. You can contact me on Instagram at swordwomen. Send me a PM. Or you can send me an email if you write to buythesword@my.com. Welcome to By the Sword, where we discuss the modern study of historical European martial arts, or HEMA, with instructors, experts, and martial artists from all over the world. In this episode, we meet Tom Hodges of Faceless Fencer Training Simulators. We talk about innovation, safety, and growth in a pandemic. The episode was recorded 4th of April 2021 on Instagram Live.
Are we on?
We are, and my washing machine cycle has just finished. It's just announced.
Amazing. Yeah, sorry about that. Modern technology.
That's okay.
Not very good. So,
Tom Hodges of Faceless Fencer, thank you for joining me this evening and thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, I've had a little break for Easter, even though it is actually in Easter now, so I didn't plan my break at the right time. But how's your Easter weekend going? Have you been up to anything?
Very nice, actually. Not been much, to be honest. A little bit of sorting out some orders, but on the whole, fairly chilled out, so I'm quite enjoying that.
good Sunday lunch, things like that.
Yeah, I've got some I may be covered in flour at the moment. I'm preparing some vegan steaks, which Ooh. Sound a bit counterintuitive, but
is that from
a website called boosh.tv. they do a nice steak, so I'm doing that with some gluten, like wheat gluten, so I've got that covered all over me.
Are you all vegan in your household, or is that
since November? It was every lockdown. Well, we've had two proper lockdowns now, and both times I tried to do something. So the first lockdown, it was very much I really got into running and I was doing a lot of exercise. Second lockdown, it got cold and I thought, really, Tom, are you going to be out there doing that? So I thought I'd try something else, and do something else that I can do in the comfort of my own home. So we decided to go vegan.
That's a different health kick.
Yeah. One that doesn't involve going out in the cold. So that's
making things in the kitchen instead.
Exactly. And we just carried on after Christmas. So still going strong at the moment.
Might have to have a go at that. So Faceless Fencer,
yes,
is your brand, is your company, and unlike my previous guests on this season, you are not a bladesmith. You are a maker of things, things that no one else in the sort of HEMA supply industry makes. I believe you're very unique. So tell us what you make exactly, Tom.
So I make a sparring trainer, or a series of sparring trainers, and it's using HDP plastic and rubber, like Shaw 70. So it was based, my initial kind of builds were based very much using the Alan Carlson design of Dussac. Mm-hmm. And I was in conversation with him very early on in my kind of development, and he was very, really helpful to me throughout. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically a sandwich design that sandwiches the kind of soft malleable rubber between two hard bits of plastic. And I do a number of different trainers, Messer, Dussac, just released some new rondels. I've got Mace as well. And some other stuff planned for the future as well. So, yeah, just branching out kind of and exploring new designs and new ideas.
So it's weapon, it's synthetic weapons trainers that you specialise in.
That's correct. Yeah.
Non-metal. Well, there is metal in them, but they're not like bladed simulators. Mm-hmm. So have you got any? So before I get onto that, I was going to say what do you have like a manufacturing background? How did you end up in this place where you're making?
Well, yeah, I've always made stuff. I love building things, like making stuff out of nothing, and you know, all that kind of stuff. And for years, I've kind of dabbled in a lot of different kind of personal projects. You know, whether it's like painting Warhammer, doing things that involve kind of creative building processes, like. In my job, I'm an aerospace technician, so I work for an aerospace company, and a lot of my job in that field is making jigs and rigs for kind of new experimental stuff. So, so a lot of that involves kind of looking at problems, problem solving quickly on your feet, that kind of thing. So, it's what I've kind of done, certainly in my private life and then through my work career. And it was just something that when I came to HEMA, I thought I can try and apply that somehow to HEMA and develop something. So
like innovation is both your day job and your pastime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your side hustle as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So right, I can see you've got some stuff hanging up on the wall behind you. Just for the folks at home, well, not for the podcast, obviously, we'll have to sort of describe in great detail what we're looking at, because this is going to be a podcast from tomorrow. Can you just do a bit of a show and tell for us and just tell us about some of the things that you produce?
So you can see some bits behind me, but I've got some close-up bits that we can look at. So these have come along, these designs have come along. I'll sit back a bit so you can see them a bit better. It doesn't help that I'm wearing a black t-shirt. That was silly. Sorry? So I'll tell you what, I'm going to go on my knees. There we go. It's the back wall. Look at that. I'm flexible if nothing else. This is an example of the latest Dussac design that I've got. So you can see that you've got HDP plastic on the sides, and then it houses a rubber blade. The idea of rubber in the blade is to kind of, well, protection. It's got a flexible tip, which helps to, not hurt when you're stabbing somebody. It actually bends, so you never get to touch the plastic, which is quite nice. It always keeps you away from the plastic. And when these were first designed, the idea was for them to be very much, it was a kind of a safer, more manufacturable, like on a larger scale, kind of synthetic trainer that was squishy and safe. What we found when testing, and in fact, I believe you were probably there for some of the first testing
I was a guinea pig.
Yes, absolutely. It was, I'm not going to kneel down anymore. You've seen it now. it was Midsummer Fight's Dream, which was Oxford Sword and Staff a tournament that was put on, and I was asked by Robin Hersham to put together a couple of Dussacs for the tournament, and I kind of played around with a little bit of rubber, talking, oh, we can do these things, and so I went away and did it and made some kind of very early versions, but they worked. And one of the big things to take away from that was the fact that actually probably one of the biggest selling points is not the protection alone, but the feeling of bind that you get with rubber. Yeah. You don't really get that with synthetics at all. Mm-hmm. And arguably you don't get that so much with blunt steel, because
it glides.
Exactly, yeah. So the idea about having this rubber means that when you bring two blades together, there's a stick, there's a feel. So when you're going through techniques that involve bind work, all of a sudden these become quite, really useful, actually. You get a kind of feel that you don't necessarily get with other trainers. So once I highlighted that as a really, a great kind of selling point for the design, it became less about making something that was kind of a little bit you know, just trying to replicate something for my friends and group mates that was, you know, that I could knock out and give to them, and actually something that could potentially improve people's training, like, you know, across the community. And mm-hmm. at that point, I really thought that there was some real legs with kind of trying to take it forward further. So that's the Dussac design. I've also got Messer was the first one I released in this new design. I don't know how specific you want me to go with this design, but my very early blades had rubber all the way through, very much like the Allen Carson leather trainers. But what I found is the rubber was a little bit too flexible, which is great for some things, but not necessarily for stability in the blade. So I've added a plastic rib that goes down the back, which gives a hell of a lot more stability in the sword. What also allows me to do is replace the blades. Mm-hmm. So if you get one of these, you don't have to, the life isn't on the rubber soft bit, basically. Yeah. Your trainer should last forever. You can just replace the rubber blades when you need to.
It's modular, so.
Exactly, yeah. And I was kind of keen on doing that because I didn't want it to be kind of like a quick, you know, use it for a bit and then people, I wanted something that people could use again and again, you know, and get that kind of.
Like, I'm just thinking of Trigger's broom.
Exactly, yeah. Who knows, who knows when your Dussac's not your original Dussac anymore? I have no idea.
Or some 1970s rock group, you know. None of it's original, but it's still the same Dussac.
Absolutely. Some other ones I've got these new rondel daggers. Mm-hmm. So there's, you can see they're slightly different blade lengths, but yet you get both blades with one of these, so I provide, just so you've got variation, the little Allen key so you can undo it and all that. These are really good. These don't, the bind's not the big selling point on these, it's definitely the safety, the okay. fact that you really can't hurt yourself. Well, I shouldn't say that, that's someone will prove me wrong, but it's very, yeah, the flex in that blade means it's really hard to hurt somebody when you're stabbing them. That's the short one, and the larger one was mainly for maybe if you were going into some really like high intensity sparring that involved wrestling and you were really worried about, you know, tips getting jammed in places. So this is a much more flexible one. You can feel it a little bit, it's a little bit more floppy than this one, but horses for courses, whatever you're going to be training. I've tried to make these as widespread in their use as possible, so trying to tick all the boxes.
Multi-use.
Exactly. The last one, I've got some axes as well, but unfortunately I haven't got those to show. Is the mace. This is a weird looking thing. Looks like it probably belongs in the kitchen rather than in the sparring.
Like two spatulas.
Exactly. That's not the first time I've heard that. Definitely.
I didn't even think about that until you said the word kitchen.
Fine. I set myself up there. this is one avenue I'm really interested in going down, is to try and bring weapons that, like, traditionally haven't been able to be sparred, like blunt force kind of weapons, and try and get them into sparring in a way that feels kind of representative of the real thing, or as close as you can. There's always compromise, but...
Yeah.
So yeah, things like this, things like the axe, like those are stuff that I'm really kind of passionate about, because I just want to try and get the community using more stuff, you know, and basically just spreading out their knowledge and helping, you know, helping HEMA basically. So yeah, I really, really like these, but unfortunately I don't have the axe, but.
I saw the pictures of the axe. You had a load of them, like all the pretty different colored handles.
Yeah.
So that was
based on an actual axe found in an excavation in Lake Lednica in Poland, Roland Walczeka, I had some conversation with him. I sent him one of my older designs, and he put me on to kind of like, you know, if you want to represent something, you should really go to a source material and try and replicate something as close in its geometry as possible.
Yeah.
So that's what I did with that, and it's really cool. It's really fun to swing around and stuff. And again, replaceable blades and everything. I'm trying to make everything as modular and as friendly as possible. But
that's a really interesting statement you said there about trying to make it as representative of an original piece as possible, because, like, you know, there is probably a lot of temptation to just make something as easy to use as possible. And obviously you're making stuff out of synthetic materials, and they vaguely resemble the thing that they're supposed to be training for. However, what you can reproduce is the weight and the balance of the original object, which is fascinating.
And
if we're going to be real sticklers about, you know, historical accuracy, at least that's one thing that we can reproduce.
Yes, absolutely. Now, one thing I've come to realize over so I've been kind of doing this only 3 years, so it's quite small, but one thing I have realized is basically compromise is everything with trainers. Like, at the end of the day, if you have something that looks, feels, has the weight of a real weapon, it's a real weapon. Like, so at some point you have to kind of decide where you're going to compromise and how much you're going to compromise, you know, in weight, in, you know, in how rigid it is. And it's been a real learning curve, moving from something that I was trying to make as, you know, soft and fluffy as possible to actually something that's more, you know, that
realistic.
Trying to cater to actually what people want to feel in the hand, opposed to how, because safety is a very difficult thing in HEMA. It's where do you draw your line, and everyone's line is slightly different.
It's very subjective, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So I found that also very interesting, trying to work out how much do I draw my line in the sand with it, and how much do I take on board from people, and try and find that pathway in the middle where something can be the most amount of people can use it, but, you know, it still has kind of relevance in a training environment. So
talking of safety and being an aerospace engineer, and I'm thinking about safety standards and kite standards and things like that, has that kind of crossed your radar, or is that something that you're looking into in terms of how to progress with this? Because, like, I mean, HEMA itself isn't regulated in any shape or form.
Yeah.
We don't have a governing body, and, you know, we don't, it's not like with sports fencing, they have to meet certain standards with all their masks and everything. The only people setting standards within the HEMA community are the clubs and the event organisers for the equipment. So how does that all square?
That's a really interesting point, actually. And one that I've kind of... So in my early days, I was very much of the case of... you know, I'm making something new. I have no idea what the longevity of it is and how it's going. And I really just need a couple of people to back me on that. And the great community that HEMA has, I had people that were willing to do that and really have kind of helped me out through that process. As we kind of go on, and, you know, as things get bigger and stuff, it may be that I have to look into those things further, because, yeah, you're right. Like, there isn't anything specifically that I know of that dictates exactly what a trainer should be, you know. However, like, if nothing else, it's my conscience. Like, I don't want anyone to get hurt with these. Like, and I definitely try everything out myself. So every weapon I get beaten with very hard for a long period of time. You can't replicate every situation. It kind of lies at the moment with my conscience, I would hate the idea of anything untoward happening, especially that is a sold product to people. You know, I'm providing something that people are paying for, and they want to work. So the idea that anything could hurt somebody is, you know, awful. Like, so,
well, I mean, if cold steel can sleep in their bed at night, I don't think you've got anything to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, but then that comes down to, you know, their individual ethos, you know, and mine, and I, you know, they're great for what they do. They pump it out there, and it's really good stuff. But what
you were saying earlier about, you know, at some point a trainer is not a trainer anymore; it's just a weapon. Their synthetic daggers, for example, I've seen go through two before.
Right.
I guess it's down to how you're using them as well.
People tend to
buy a plastic thing, assuming it's plastic, therefore it's safe, is not necessarily the case.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, yeah, and it comes back to that compromise again. Like, if you're looking for one material to replicate all of those, the things we talked about, which is ideally what you want for a trainer, you're not going to get it and then have all the safety like that you want to have in sparring. Well, I don't know of a material that kind of does all of that, which is why I kind of went for a composite, two materials that do those different things. Mm-hmm. One for the rigidity and one for the kind of the flex that you get in the tips. So I'd like to think that I answer some of the issues that people have with other synthetic trainers. That's what I'm trying to do, essentially collate a lot of information from people who I deal with, you know, who have my trainers, understand their feedback and try and implement that on future designs. And hopefully you'll get something that the majority of people will find of value.
Now, I was one of your first guinea pigs, as we said.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a go with the Desax at a Midsummer Fights Dream.
Yeah, that's it.
And you've just reminded me that that was when I first met you, obviously, and they were great fun. And you and I were on the same melee team, I believe.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. In fact, I had a cold steel dagger in my hand, I believe, at the time.
Was that the one that I ended up throwing at John Middleton?
Quite possibly, yeah. I wasn't going to bring it up. That was great fun. That was great fun.
Okay, brilliant. So we're up to, we're just coming up to half time. So folks who are watching, dipping in and out, please feel free to drop any questions for Tom. There's a button at the bottom of your screens, looks like a speech bubble with a question mark in it. And just hit that and type in your questions, anything you want to ask us, and we will attempt to answer. But yeah, all this is like, I've got loads of questions coming out of all of this. So making black rubber tools for consensually hitting people with is probably a pretty difficult thing to sort of describe to someone outside of the HEMA community. So what have you had, like, any other sort of further ideas for further applications for stuff that you're making, like people in different I was thinking like police training scenarios or other martial arts or things like, you know, in Bohurt, when they're not all dressed up in all their armor, they train with really like soft padded stuff. Do you think that you might want to sort of branch out into those various different areas?
That's something I've thought a lot about as well. All of this is reliant on growth and building and kind of, you know, having that time and effort to be able to put into that. But absolutely, like, I've thought about, I've had people say they really, they think it's a good thing for taking to a Comic-Con event, for instance.
Yeah.
Something where you want to represent a weapon, yet it's not something that's going to, you know, do any major damage, so yeah, it looks pretty cool, you know. There's been a number of avenues where I've it's too hard for something like LARP, but there are definitely different groups, and you know what, that's the biggest challenge I think with creating a brand, creating things for a community is visibility. I won't know. I mean, I can do a fair amount of research and I can ask a couple of people and send some messages, but it's almost like I'm having the visibility and having people see it and go, do you know what, that could be great for so and so. That's the biggest challenge, is to try and get people just seeing it. Getting it into people's hands is massive, because you see something on the internet and you're like, well, that looks weird, like, you know, what am I going to do with that? Having people actually use it is important, but just the visibility of actually having different groups see it.
So, because they're such tactile objects, the stuff you make. When people see them, it's not like when you see a pretty sword, you just, oh, that's pretty kind of thing. You might want to pick it up and feel its balance and everything, but with those, you look at them and you just think, I want to play with that. I want to see what it does. I want to see what, you know, what its balance is. It's just like, they are like literally toys.
Well, that's good to hear. Play
beating each other up with safely. One question that's been in the back of my mind is, where do you get the name from, Faceless Spencer? Where does that come from?
So that's a good question. That comes from when I originally did my mask. When I got my mask, I was like, well, I'm definitely painting it, because that I have to paint and customize everything that I have.
Paint everything.
Yeah. So I wanted to paint the mask. Looking at the HEMA kind of the look with the big, you know, all in black and stuff like that, my mind immediately went to No Face from Spirited Away. I don't know if aware of the Ghibli, yeah. So I painted my mask like No Face. And when I was creating, trying to think of a brand name, I thought No Face, it's Faceless Spencer. It kind of just came from that, really. So I have Studio Ghibli to thank for that. So, but yeah.
Cute. I was thinking it's just the fact that once someone puts their mask on, they could be anyone, couldn't they?
Yeah, there is that. I mean, obviously, when you paint it to look like No Face, you're pretty much obvious. That's definitely him.
That's the reference. So, take us through, like, what was the inspiration when you, well, I think you said that Robin asked you to make something, didn't he?
Mm.
So has the process for making each of your products been the same, or does it vary?
Right. So, yeah. So in the early days, it was very much, I was kind of like copying existing designs, replacing the materials, having a play, seeing how that goes. When I realized the specific characteristics of the material I was using, the rubber, I knew that I had to create a different design. So every design since then, there's a lot, concept is quite simple, but then moving to prototype and going into revisions, that's where you kind of really have to kind of understand what material you use and how it works and how you need to support it. So when I'm creating blades now, I'm very much, I have a standard design in mind of how I need to support the material, which I've kind of developed over the years. So I kind of know the basic principles of where the rubber's going to be, where the plastic's going to be, how many screws I'm probably going to need to support it, you know, not to have too many sharp corners because you don't want to create anything that rips through the rub. All these kind of things I've learned. When you come to a new weapon, I think the biggest thing is length. So depending on the length of the blade, you have to really think about how you're going to get that point of balance to feel right. So on some of the smaller weapons, I don't have to really worry about that at all. It's just, it kind of, they come out and they feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly when you're doing the messes with the big, that's the longest weapon I've got so far, that I instantly realized I needed to go back and try and create some more weight in the handle. Mm-hmm. And I've done that in both the messes and Dussac by putting a steel rod through the handle. So that was something where, you know, and now that's become almost, you know, when I'm designing new trainers, I've got a few designs in development at the moment. That's kind of now a go-to. Well, we know we're going to put some metal in the handle to make the point of balance better. But yeah, so these things kind of come as you're developing a new thing. Every weapon has its different challenges. Every different shape has, you know, different different feel and different problems that, and or say challenges, not problems, yeah, that come with using the material, and overcoming those influences your designs going forward. So
yeah, it's, you don't have to make the same mistakes again.
Exactly, it's a constant learning process. It's really enjoyable.
So you're saying that the length of the weapon affects a lot of what you do. And I've noticed that all your weapons that you simulators that you make are non-sword weapons. Mm. Would you ever consider making swords in the future?
So
still too much of a challenge at the moment.
Well, so like my dream when I first started was to be able to create a synthetic longsword trainer, because right. I was fairly new to HEMA and longswords. Great, isn't it? it was the first weapon I learned with, and it's great. So that was my kind of goal from day one, you know, as the kind of future long term. It is still a possibility in my mind. However, I know that every time they grow in size, there's another issue to come with. So I have, what I'm trying to do is, anytime I approach a new trainer, I'm trying to incrementally increase the size depending on the trainer I'm doing. So I wouldn't necessarily jump straight to doing a longsword now. I'd do a number of different trainers that slowly build up that size, you know, because you're answering the question slowly, and it may be that actually the materials don't allow it. And that's something when you're dealing with materials in making stuff, that sometimes it just can't do it. And I'm yet to find the point where this material can't do the job. But, you know, I'd definitely love to have a long sword.
I love your approach. It's like I'm answering a question slowly, and on the way I'm answering all these other questions. So it's really, really, really nice outlook, like very positive and creative way of thinking. We've got a question here.
Mm-hmm.
Where's it gone? We didn't get a question. Wrong thing. Right, so I was going to just say, like you're saying about I'm always answering a question, but it's sort of moving towards that goal. Do you have, like, once you've made something, obviously you're going to look back at it and go, I should have done it like this. Does that mean that every time you make an item, because they're all individually handmade by one person, you, they're not like in a sort of machine process in a factory?
Yeah, so they are... I assemble them all, but what I've done in order to improve all of the quality is I use UK based machine shops. So I use two machine shops, just through kind of like
to save time.
Yeah, and being in the business that I'd be in, my day job, like you kind of get to understand that what a machine shop can do, what they can't do. So I've worked with a couple of them now, and I've got some really great guys working on it, and they can produce things that I can never produce alone, mainly just because of tooling. I don't have the space for the tooling. So I have people that cut the blades and a machine shop that cuts the plastic, and I work with them independently, and then they come all to me, and then I assemble them. So everyone that you get, I've assembled, I've put together myself. So I do use machine shops because I think it's important for repeatability, to try and make sure the project is the same every time.
For that consistency.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, do you sort of like look at it and go, I need to change that design? Do you do that as you go along? I know I'm thinking of people like sparring gloves, they'll come out with a new version of something after a couple of years or whatever. How does it work?
So as being somebody who's generally a creative person, one of the traits that tend to come is like never being satisfied. So everything I do, I'll look back at it and kind of go, you know what, maybe. And actually a lot of that's informed by the people I send them to, who, you know, to get feedback, and, you know, people who buy it and getting their feedback. it all adds to this kind of like part of things that I need to do. What I'm keen on doing now, though, because I think I've got a bit of a magic formula with the general construction, is to keep certain geometries the same.
Yeah.
So for me, if any Dussac that modification that I do in future ones, unless it's a complete from the ground up different thing, I'll always keep the blade geometry the same.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you had an old one or a new one, any blade is going to fit for the Dussac. You know, I'm quite keen on that, because the people who have bought my trainers early doors in the last couple of years, like, I massively value them, like, really hugely, because they've allowed me to do it. Like, I don't have a massive lump of money or a kind of loads of time. Like, I'm kind of building these as they, you know, building a lot, getting some out, just keeping that running, keeping this research and development running. So I have a lot to thank for the people who have my trainers already. And I'm really keen to, like, I want them to be using their trainers in the next 10 years. Like, that's my goal. And so any modification I do, it always has that mind of, we can't change the fundamentals, because I don't want anyone's weapon to suddenly go out and be like defunct in a year's time because there's a new thing coming out and I'm not supporting theirs anymore.
You want them to last.
So for instance, the first run of Dussacs I did had a Nagel. That's being removed now because I've had feedback from people, and some people like it and some people like don't necessarily need a Nagel on a Dussac. And arguably you could say that it kind of gets in the way of the fun with certain, you know, certain things that people want to do with it. So I've decided to take away that Nagel. That's not going to affect any of the blades. If anyone who's already got one who wants to buy a new blade, that's not going to affect any of that. It's just a decision that I've made, which I can make, and it's not, shouldn't affect anybody really. Things like the handle as well. Like, I'm looking into, you know, what's the best handle size for people, because I've got massive hands, and I do try and think about people if you don't have big lumps of meat like this, but it's difficult to always learn that, so, you know, put that stuff into practice before you've got it out there. So things like handle size, little things that make it better for the people to use, I can definitely change. But I think the fundamentals of the ones that I've got will remain the same, and anything that's completely new will just be a completely new product. So.
On that note, has anyone asked you to make anything custom for them?
Yeah, so I have had a few custom, more in the early days when I was very much just like, I think, you know, obviously with brands and stuff, you look at a Facebook page and you see a picture and you're like, oh, this is a company, you know. And in the very early days, I was very keen to kind of show that, hello, I'm just a guy trying some stuff out.
I'm just a bloke in a shed.
Exactly. Well, yeah, like, I think that's quite a nice thing.
It is a nice thing.
But also, just because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to people to understand what they're kind of investing in a process with me. As sappy as that sounds. But like in the early days when I was just starting, I had a lot of people saying, oh, would you like to make this? Like, I had requests for an Aztec, I can't remember.
Oh, Macahuitl.
That's it. Yeah, there we go. I wasn't going to try and say it, so I'm glad you did.
I've had to do a few videos on it, so I've had to learn how to pronounce it.
So I've had questions about that. I've had questions about a number of things, a number of different axe shapes. The difficulty for me is just the time and the effort, like, and everything I do has to be able to fund the next project.
Right.
So I'd usually do a prototype machine run of around 20 items. So I have to have at least 20 people kind of like, you will probably want something for me to kind of pull the trigger on doing a machining run. Now that is changing, and that will change over the next year or so. I'm hopefully doing bigger orders and stuff, but yeah, so I'm limited by time, and I'm also limited by resources to do those. But yeah, like, new designs are always things I love to hear about, like, especially if it's something I've never seen before. It's just great to look at it and go, wow, wonderful. And like, I think it was last year, at the end of last year, I did a poll on my Facebook page, which is kind of where I do most of my business and stuff. Just asking, I had a number of weapons and just asked people to kind of vote on what they liked, because it's really important to know what actually people want, you know.
Sorry.
It's something can look cool, and that it can be like, oh yeah, that, you know, you can get one or two people say, oh, that'd be nice, but until you actually ask the kind of wider audience, it's very difficult to know what actually people want in their training. So because I'm always interested in new weapons, so if you have any ideas, get in contact,
folks, shooting some ideas.
Absolutely,
let them know. So what is the next thing in the pipeline?
So the next thing in my, well, I've got two answers to that, I suppose. What am I designing next, and where the business is going? Designs, because that's kind of like the fun bit. I'm working currently on my next design. It's the closest to the line is the Partisan, so I've been working on that a lot. It looks so cool. Like, we're cadding it at the moment, and it just looks great. There's a lot of challenges with it to have the stability and still have the flexibility and stuff like that. But that's the closest one to the finish line at the moment. So I'll hopefully be doing some type of prototype runs within the next month or so. And I have, I also am moving on further to looking at ideas for a Dane axe, because that was one that was on that poll. A lot of people, do you know, I put the Dane axe on as like, I was just trying to think of some other weapons, and I was like, well, the Viking axe, people did like the idea of a longer one, so maybe if I just put Dane axe in. And I think it was like top of the list. So there we go. So you learn things every day. So that's also in the pipeline for the future. And I'm also developing some kind of more private stuff as well with different distributors to try and, you know, just answer, give some people that are using them for specific events and stuff, you know, giving them options. So I'm working on loads of stuff, really. But yeah, Partisan is the next thing you'll probably see new from me.
You can't make swords yet. However, you can make pole weapon heads.
That's
a whole, you know, that opens up a whole wealth of things that you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really looking into that, because, like, in fact, I think one of the very first designs I ever had was for Oxford Swan staff. Niall asked me to do a halberd head. Is like, could you do that out of rubber? And I brought this bit of rubber sandwiched between two bits of plywood, and I was like, yeah, I think you can. And then I realised, kind of like, after kind of doing a bit of stuff, the forces involved in that kind of a weapon, and I definitely stepped away from it at that point, because I was still quite focused on safety, on trying to create something that I could say was super safe. I've realized kind of over talking to different people over the time, that actually when you're talking about halberds and that kind of thing, like, you ain't getting safe. Like, safety
it's
is
still
is,
a big stick at the end of the day,
with something on the end of it. Now,
with a weight on the end,
if you could make something that was safe enough to hit a full whack at somebody, it literally wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't look anything like a halberd. So So I am moving towards looking at more of these polearm weapons, as kind of now I've just developed like an understanding of what's good about my product, and what, you know. So that's definitely another route to go down, looking at those things. But yeah, as far as the business goes though, like, this next year is going to be hopefully growth, basically. At the moment, I'm kind of, a lot of my sales go through me. and I sell through Black Armoury. They supported me really early on, and I've, you know, yeah, they've helped so much. Anthony's helped me so much.
Are they in France?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So he's helped me massively. And then I'm actually a bit of an exclusive, first time I talked about it, and I had the okay to talk about it. Ooh. So I will be selling on Tempest Fugitives website.
I thought so.
Well. Yeah.
I could sense it.
Yeah, there we go. So that's great. And what I'm looking to do over the next year is to get enough distributors across the world that I can then basically pull back my personal shipping to prototypes only.
Yeah.
So the idea would be that you would follow the page, and the page would give you lots of information on the new stuff that I'm making, and you would get first look and first chance to get your hands on something that's new and different. And then I would look to then distributing that out to distributors. And I think for me, that will free me up quite a lot to be able to then work more on actually kind of developing stuff, and a bit less on, you know, sending so many different items out to across the world.
We're in the UK, and then the Black Fencer are in France. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people viewing this are in the States. Do you have a distributor in the USA?
There is, I'd say, early discussions. I am looking to move towards that. Yes. So once I've got a distributor in America, that's kind of the last step for me, is to be selling there like regularly. And then the idea is to then just make big orders for these distributors. And then, as I say, on the Facebook page, the more personal kind of prototype stage, send stuff out to people, get people's feedback, understand what's good, understand what's not good, probably slightly cheaper price because it's a first run and you don't really know what you're getting, and kind of have, I really want to keep that kind of conversational, like personal touch to what I'm doing, like, because, you know, it is me and I am approachable, and I really want to hear from people, you know, because it's how I learn. I'm not an expert in a lot of I know how to make stuff, but I'm not an expert in swordsmanship. So
I mean, it was the community that inspired you in the first place. So
yeah.
You want to keep that contact, that connection with the people that use your stuff.
Absolutely. And it's just such a good community. Everyone who's bought from me has been absolutely really positive. The feedback's been great. It's an absolute joy to get into a community like this. Like, when I've looked at, you know, working at different projects, different companies, doing different things in the past, I've never found like a community that's, it's at that kind of lovely stage of being like, I feel slightly under-resourced in from companies, but is growing and has like a good, healthy community, and people just like supporting each other, where, you know, whether it's like HEMA hacks, like people online showing what they've made, and it's great. It's like it's for a creative person, it's a perfect place to kind of dip your toe in
I think it's like that combination of passion and you know, the just desire to like meet needs, is so wholesome. I think it's one of the really lovely things about the HEMA community, because like we're so new and as you say, under resourced in a lot of ways, and it's like, how can we help one another, how can we make this happen? It's like, you love swords, I love swords, you know, let's do what we can to be able to hit each other with swords safely. And I think that's a lovely note to end on, Tom. Thank you so much. It was lovely.
Thank you thanks for everyone who's listening. Really appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Great. I'll see you soon, and hopefully whack each other with some trainers in the future.
Let's hope so.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To show your appreciation, please give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform, or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/swordwomen. Go to @swordwomen on Instagram to see upcoming interviews, or visit buythesword.net to learn about our events, or visit our Facebook page, By the Sword.